Greetings, salutations, hello. You're listening to Hypocritical, a podcast by Hypocritic GG. I'm Lou, some call me Cheatspeak, and in thinking about this episode, I swear I sprouted 10 new gray hairs, I got a hip replacement coming up, we're getting old, folks! And so are our games. It's a topic I've been thinking about for the past few weeks, thought it would make an interesting episode this time around. And I don't know if you've noticed, but in the past maybe decade plus, there's been an interesting phenomenon going on. Games and the hardware that they run on have had longer shelf lives than ever before. It used to be that console generations would routinely last somewhere between 4 and 6 years when you're talking about clean break going from the previous generation to the next, brand new hardware, new experiences to go with it in your hands. But especially again in recent years, that really hasn't been the case anymore. And we're seeing longer and longer gaps between new hardware and in some cases new software and new games. And that gulf is getting wider. Look at even the most recent generations as we're recording this. We had the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, both launching in, I believe, 2013. To get to the Xbox Series S/X and the PS5, well, both of those launched in 2020. That's 7 years apart with mid-cycle refreshes. And if recent rumors are to be believed based on what's potentially coming after those consoles, we're looking at a similar chunk of time. If we take a brief walk through, you know, Nintendo's history, at least, you know, releasing consoles in North America, you see a similar story as well. The NES in 1985, the SNES in 1991, 6 years. The Nintendo 64 in 1996, 5 years. GameCube in 2001, 5 years. Wii in 2006, 5 years. Wii U in 2012, 6 years. Switch in 2017, 5 years. Now with the Switch 2 set to launch, again, as we record this in 2025, that puts the original Switch on year 8 of its life, which is insane to think about, especially given the context. So with all of these gaps happening, why is that? And what's causing that shift in the industry? Well, it seems, at least to my eyes, that it is harder than ever to create that sort of quote-unquote generational leap with graphics, gameplay, and the overall experience all sort of merged together to create something genuinely new that is objectively farther ahead technologically, you know, soup to nuts, than a console's predecessor. You look at certain trends across time that helped make that leap very obvious. Go back to, again, the early mid-1990s, that jump to 3D from 2D and sprite-based technologies, overwhelmingly powerful and was a complete justification for new hardware. You go into the late 2000s with something like the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3 compared to their prior offerings, you're looking at obviously HD gameplay, which did make a difference, and mainstreaming online gameplay and multiplayer connectivity in that space where something like the original Xbox dabbled with it and had the support for it. It really became mainstream through Xbox Live in those mid to late 2000s. The early to mid 2010s, you're looking at more kind of persistent connected experiences and the rest of the internet kind of leaking in to that standalone gameplay, especially where social media integrations were involved. Something like, you know, when the PlayStation 4 launched or even the Nintendo Switch, the social media and sharing features were front and center on how connected that device really was. You fast forward to the 2020s, there's 4K gaming and how that's pushed and presented with the Series X and the PS5. Perhaps not as seismic a difference when compared to games of the previous generation. You know, you talk about faster loading with SSDs now the standard as opposed to spinning hard drives, and that obviously makes a difference, but it can be harder to objectively sort of justify that technological leap. And it seems to be taking a little more time to get there based on the advancement of some technologies that are out there. Along with that, it's pretty clear at this point that games themselves running on this hardware with an extended life are now also lasting longer than they ever have before. You see so often new content, new seasons, new live service endeavors and initiatives coming out over standalone sequels almost everywhere you look in a lot of cases. There are many, many examples of games that simply have not had a sequel in a very long time. And we'll go through maybe 4 or 5 kind of key examples just to drive the point home. You see this a lot in the shooter space with especially some looter shooter type deals. Destiny 1, for example, came out in what, 2014? Very quickly followed up relatively by Destiny 2, I believe in 2017, with nothing since. It's all been expansion packs and seasonal things and live service work for Destiny 2 with absolutely no plans as of this recording for Bungie to produce Destiny 3. Halo worked in much a similar way. You know, you had a pretty consistent release of Halo games for, you know, pretty much a decade and a half from Halo CE to Halo 5. You were pretty much getting a new mainline game every 3 years, in some cases sooner. You look at the gap between Halo Reach and Halo 4, for example. Halo 5 to Halo Infinite took 6 years with all of that development trouble, and Infinite was supposed to lay the groundwork for the next decade of Halo experiences without sequels. Now we're trending that way anyway. You know, it's been 4 years since launch there, but not necessarily for the best reasons, with all of the challenges that that studio has faced. Fortnite's Battle Royale mode came out in 2017, and there is no sequel in sight, and why would you? It is still one of the most popular games and most profitable games in the world, although Fortnite is a specific instance that I think we're going to spend a little more time talking about. Look at Sid Meier's Civilization. Good old Civ, right? Even going back to Civ 4. You look at the stretch of time between these. Civ 4 came out in 2005, Civ 5 in 2010, Civ 6 in 2016, Civ 7 in 2025, a 9-year gap between those mainline entries. And if you take a look at some of the commentary and reviews on Civ 7, not altogether welcome changes that may well just drive people back to those old games anyway. So we'll talk about that too. Even something like The Sims, that routinely got updates every 4 to 5 years, you know, The Sims 1, Sims 2, 4 years apart, 5 years to The Sims 3, 5 years to The Sims 4, The Sims 5 has been canceled, and canceled for a good long time. It has been expansion packs and stuff packs and add-ons to The Sims 4 for over a decade with no end in sight. So the plan and the routines for publishing new content and updating games and getting new experiences out there to players has radically shifted in the past, you know, let's say 5 to 10 years. In a lot of cases, now this isn't going to be a pro versus con, good versus bad debate necessarily, but there are a lot of reasons that I've been thinking about recently why this sort of transition into a different kind of development and support model makes sense for a lot of franchises and a lot of IPs, and why it could make sense for franchises that don't currently do it. So for one, this is obviously a huge benefit for live service games. It saves on transition pains going from game to game. It saves on potential incompatibilities across platforms if you have to bridge between different console generations, worry about features working, whatever. And it avoids the risk of losing your progress, your cosmetics, your hard-earned unlockables. So it's even more valuable in those long-running scenarios where games have been out for a long time or players are putting a lot of time and effort into it. You think about something like moving from Destiny 1 to Destiny 2 across even just a 3-year span there or so, and how much agita, let's say, there was about migrating there. You know, asking someone to take their potentially 7-8 years or more, you know, by then probably a decade plus of work in Destiny 2. If that all doesn't transfer into Destiny 3 somehow, what do you think is going to happen to a lot of that dedicated player base that's spending all the money on your game? Probably nothing good. Lock the doors. Barricade the windows, you know what I mean? Overwatch 2 is a great example of this, because sometimes sequels are just not as good or not as favorably received as the titles that were coming from. We mentioned Civ 6 and Civ 7 earlier, not that there's a lot of transition happening there. You're not giving up your Civ 6 save files, for example. But Overwatch 2, if you think back to that one, made a lot of poorly received changes to the gameplay and the structure and how things were unlocked and what you had access to. There wasn't much, if any, loot crossover that I can recall, although I may be wrong there. And the original game was straight up made unavailable as a result. So they forced everybody onto Overwatch 2, which most people perceived as objectively worse. And it just sort of tainted the whole endeavor as a result. So they took a big risk on it. And at least to a lot of players' minds, it didn't really pay off. So did they need to go to a whole new model in Overwatch 2 and sort of abandon all whatever goodwill was left in the original game? I don't know, but that was the choice that they made. And that's the risk you run if you want to take that sort of tact to it. It's also helpful from a player perspective, because then you don't have the need to buy something new or invest more money into something else. Games are getting very expensive, not just to buy, but to develop. They're very complicated. They're very arduous from a development and publishing perspective. What would have taken 2 to 3 years, you know, to develop a decade ago or 15 years ago, games now routinely take half a decade or more to get out the door, especially if you're starting from scratch. So they are incredibly expensive to make. you're putting a lot of risk into that. And therefore, that has to kind of bleed over into the market to some degree. $70 AAA games are now commonplace across the PS5 and the Xbox Series consoles, with Nintendo even dipping their toes into this with something like Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom launching at $70, and them stating that they will take higher priced games on sort of a case-by-case basis. The whole industry's moved in that direction. So it is incredibly risky to take a new tact and develop something new to replace something that maybe is beloved or has a really healthy player base. And maybe people aren't asking for big new innovations or changes. They like what they have. Why make Fortnite 2 and push everybody onto it when Fortnite is doing so incredibly well? You know, that would assumedly be a lot of money. It would be a lot of work, years and years and years of work if you're building something from the ground up and really changing the fundamentals of it. And speaking of, you know, it's interesting that, you know, new mechanics, modes, or updates can also be added to these existing games without the need for complete, you know, expensive overhauls like we're talking about in the form of a sequel, with online connectivity more or less an expectation at this point and a prerequisite for most of these titles. You have built-in ways to provide that new content where normally you would need a separate disc or a separate cartridge to really introduce something new. You can't just go pull it down off the internet on your Nintendo 64, right? Or even, you know, your GameCube or your PS2 for the most part. It's now so much easier to deliver those updates, quality of life improvements, new mechanics, different elements of the experience. You don't need a bona fide sequel for that. And pretty much every studio in this position has realized that to some degree. It's also interesting to think about, you know, not all sequels are created equal. And you have a lot of instances where sequels, numbered sequels, don't add a lot of value compared to the titles you're coming from. We've mentioned this, you know, pretty routinely across the channel at times, but, and for as much as I love the franchise and the IP, it sticks in your craw from time to time. You take a look at Splatoon, Splatoon 1, 2, 3, all the way through. You put those games side by side and run gameplay of them, you know, two people that aren't very invested in it, or even if they are, they might really struggle to tell it apart, because functionally speaking, Splatoon 1, 2, and 3 all play very, very similarly to each other. There's little nips and tucks under the hood. And you can say the same for a lot of kind of annual shooter franchises, right, where there's not a ton of difference year to year. Do you really need those sequels? Do we need a Splatoon 4? I mean, it's probably going to happen. Could we not have just built upon Splatoon 3 for a long time? If the really big innovations and changes to the mechanics aren't there, sometimes to some people, it might be harder to justify why a sequel is coming out and making people move to the new one. When was the last time you had a Madden game come out that felt must get year on year? Unless you're so baked into something like Ultimate Team and you are so deep into that ecosystem, what is the impetus to go get Madden 25 over Madden 24 or Madden 24 over Madden 23, aside from roster updates and one or two new modes or tweaks to something you may not even care about? So there are very obvious instances where something like that would make more sense as sort of that platform model, right? Where you just have the base experience that you keep building upon, like Fortnite, over the years, over the, in some cases, you know, decades, plural for some of these. We're going to start getting to that point. It's really interesting to think about it from this perspective. Now, there are some downsides to staying with the same general underpinnings of a game for 5, 7, 10 years and just letting that kind of ride out. And the big glaring point for that is likely a lack of sort of genuine innovation or advancements in the mechanics. You will have games like Fortnite that drop entirely new things like vehicles or traversal mechanics or maps or whatever it is, so that it does feel really fresh. And a lot of those features would be something that you would see in an entirely separate numbered sequel years and years ago. But for other franchises that have sort of leaned more heavily on discrete mechanics across discrete titles, you can have that same sort of general gameplay loop in these games throughout many, many years. And some of them don't really offer enough ways to keep things fresh or interesting. Halo Infinite, I think, was a really, really good example of that, where the studio struggled to get in that live service groove for so long. Yeah, the gameplay loop was really solid, but given the context of sort of what was expected from a live service experience, how quickly the sort of limited content ran dry, you really just saw people wishing that there was more, you know, if not a formalized sequel, then a much more aggressive push into the live service game. And now with things like Forge and a lot of creator modding tools and file sharing and things like that, it did kind of eventually get there, but in some cases it ends up too little too late. The other real downside off the top of my head that you sort of think about is that with so few, in some cases, now not every franchise is like this, and we're, you know, certainly not considering things like, you know, Spider-Man games or like the Horizon series or ones that do have those discrete sequels that really advance things. Generally speaking, though, when you get into this model, you end up having fewer unique games pushing those exclusive features and the power of newer hardware. A lot of these long-term experiences, you think Fortnite, for example, you think, you know, other games of that ilk, they're often kind of held down by that lowest common denominator. So in this case, as we recorded, it's the original Nintendo Switch, it's the PS4, it's the Xbox One, the latter two, you know, consoles that are well over a decade old at this point and still aging. So that's a lot of time, even in today's sort of situation, that is a lot of time for a hardware to piece of hardware to stay active. And while this isn't completely unheard of, you know, the PS2 had an incredibly long life after the PS3 launched, for example. There's less of an incentive to have that formalized cutoff, I think, to fully switch to the newer generation of hardware and therefore push the unique features that are there with it. Fortnite, for whatever it updates with or whatever new mechanics come its way, everything that runs on the PS5 and the Series X and high-end PCs also pretty much, I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions, but pretty much has to run on the Nintendo Switch, on the original Xbox One, on the original PS4. Because the game is still freely available there. And the expectation is you're going to be, you know, part and parcel with stronger consoles when you play those games. So it's an interesting situation to be in. And again, it's not necessarily a negative in all of those situations. And there are genuine advantages to having so much compatibility across so much time, like we said, especially in terms of sinking time and resource and money into new games and new consoles that a lot of people may not have. But it's a curious thing to think about. And I don't know if it's crossed your mind recently, but hopefully after listening to this, it's given you something to think about, where we're staying with the games that we play and the hardware that we play them on longer than ever before. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution when we think about these things. And when you think about the long-term health of a particular game or a particular franchise, it truly is a case-by-case endeavor. Should Madden move to a platform model and just put everything in one hub year over year? Yeah. Is that going to make them as much money? No. Are they going to do it? Probably not. At any rate, hope it's given you something to think about. And that is where we'll leave you with the post-show topics for today. Have you noticed this yourself? And can you think of other franchises or other IPs that have sort of started this lengthening of time? And do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's a bad thing? Does it really need to be a sort of case-by-case basis as we consider these things? That's your homework. Let us know in our Discord, in the Hypocritical channel, and respond as you see fit. Hypocritic.gg is your hub for all things Hypocritic. Check out our live streams, convention coverage, video reviews, industry interviews, and more, and join that aforementioned Discord community where you can react to topics we discuss here on the podcast and get the inside scoop on what's coming next from us. Thanks so much for listening. Stay fresh, cheese bags. We'll catch you back here real soon.